I'm Vermont Edition producer Daniela Fierro, popping in to say we've edited this podcast a little for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. The biggest news story this year is tomorrow's election, of course. For months, local and national news outlets have been covering the presidential campaigns, the balance of power in Congress and state legislatures, local ballot issues, election security, and so much more. This coverage extends to student news outlets as well. Instead of focusing solely on what's going on campus, many student journalists are reporting on election issues. Some of those stories go on to get published or aired by major news outlets, including Vermont Public. We have a partnership with the University of Vermont on a student internship program, and some student work airs on our station. That's made possible because of something called the Community News Service. We'll learn more about it in a moment, as well as other election-related student journalism and the overall learning opportunity that this political season provides. Joining us today in the studio is Meg Little-Riley. She's the managing director of the Community News Service, a UVM program that connects student journalists with professional editors and local news outlets. Meg, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined in the studio by two student journalists at UVM, senior Gwen Matthews, a film and TV major with a minor in reporting and documentary storytelling. Gwen, welcome.
Thank you.
And we also have junior Alice Sheehan with us, a public communications major with a concentration in journalism. Welcome, Ace.
Thank you.
All right, Meg, tell us a little bit more about the Community News Service. What's the history of it on UVM's campus?
Yeah, so the Community News Service is our Vermont student reporting arm. It's been around for about 5 years now. It started small, but the demand from students and from our local news partners was high from the very beginning, so it grew rapidly. Recently, we expanded all of our ambitions in this area and established, with the help of a significant grant from the Knight Foundation, the Center for Community News, which is a nationally facing organization at the University of Vermont that it does two things at UVM. Our primary function is that we are working with other universities that are running student reporting programs just like ours. And of course, we continue to manage the Community News Service here at UVM. So I help manage that overarching organization, the Center for Community News. And we have a couple primary goals in mind for this work. The first one, of course, is giving Vermont students at the University of Vermont opportunities to go out into our communities and just understand how they work and get to know folks here and maybe even establish some roots. The second one is to help our small community news organizations. Some of them are newspapers, some of them are digital outlets, and we also have multimedia partners too, just to help them sustain themselves. The last 20 years, we've seen a cratering of important local news outlets around the country, and the costs to democracy at the local level are so profound. So providing the news reporting, the free content that our students provide, it's an important function in helping to sustain all of these news organizations as well. And this is something that we're doing at the national level by also working with other universities around the country to figure out what's working best in these university-led partnerships. How can we sort of crowdsource the best ways for modeling the programs, for working with local programs, for getting into the course syllabus, fundraising, like basically a lot of it is just kind of the nuts and bolts of making sure these work, because we're pretty sure this can be one of the solutions to the local news crisis. And the cool thing is that the UVM program, the one we have across the state of Vermont now, really is a leader in this field right now. What we're doing, we have one of the more ambitious program designs for this, because some of these programs work with like one news outlet. Some of them just sort of like do their own reporting and then make this stuff free. We have formal partnerships with a number of newspapers across the state, and we're doing news reporting on assignment from the papers. We're also doing, we helped establish the places like the Winooski newspaper and the Waterbury Roundabout, which are now, so we're sort of reviving tiny news deserts in the state. It's been fantastic. We have dozens of students each year who are participating. It's really exciting.
And to be clear, for students to get involved, do they sign up as a class or is it more like a club?
So it started as what we call like an immersive internship, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's not an extracurricular. You get credit for it. You can budget your time as you would any other class. And we have sort of two tiers. We have kind of intro level and then a more advanced one. But now we're expanding our offerings right now. So we also have an environmental reporting one. We have a broadcast reporting class that's coming up. So some of them are more applied internship classes, which are like just 90% reporting and writing. Some of them are kind of blend of academic instruction and some reporting, like our environmental reporting one. So it's all mixed. But in every case, students get credit and we produce news reporting about the state of Vermont for our news partners.
So I'd love to hear from some of the students now who are involved in this program. Gwen, you're a senior now. When did you first get involved in journalism on campus?
Yeah, it's actually, it kind of upsets me. I was only involved last year, and I really thought that I didn't have a place in the journalism sphere. I wasn't quite interested in it, and I thought there weren't enough opportunities to tell narratives and stuff. But after listening to a lot of my instructors and just hearing their love for storytelling and how they connect with the community, it was really intriguing. And I thought, what a better way, like, is there a better way to gain confidence in talking to community members and getting my voice heard, and even if it's a small way, you know? So yeah, I got bit by the bug.
And what about you, Ace? Did you get bit as well?
Yeah, definitely. So I started just this year as a junior, since last year I was still taking a lot of prerequisites courses and just sort of figuring my way out as I, you know, got further into my major. But I heard a lot of great things from different professors, kind of like Gwen said. And from there, really just got interested. I had always been really interested in journalism, but I didn't know exactly if it was something I wanted to pursue or how I was supposed to pursue it. But with the help of a lot of my professors and different opportunities, I kind of came upon this one, and I'm definitely really enjoying it, and it's just been such a great opportunity.
Yeah. All right, listeners, we know many of you worked for your student newspapers in high school or college. Call in and tell us about it. What kind of things did you cover? Were you covering things that were specific to campus, or like these students we're talking to today, were you covering issues that affected your community at large, like elections? 800-639-2211. So Meg, let's talk here about the election coverage that you all have been working on. This is high stakes coverage. It's a huge election season, both here in Vermont and nationally. How do you go about preparing students to cover what's likely their first election season?
Yeah, absolutely. We started across all of the classes that our reporting students are in right now. We started with discussions about how to vote, how it works, how polling locations work, what the tabulations are going to look like, some of the mechanics of that. And in many cases, as in the class that Gwen and Ace are in, the students actually had an opportunity to report for the public on how some of these mechanics are going to work, or to interview like a poll worker, some of the kind of democracy informational reporting that can be really useful. And in the process of researching those stories and interviewing the folks who are election officials, there was a kind of also education for how they themselves might also access the vote for the first time, too.
Yeah.
And that's one of the really exciting things about doing this work. And I should say, as an aside, one of the cool benefits of the way we do it at UVM is that we don't really look at it as being a program to train journalists. Many students come through and become working journalists, increasingly more of them. But we want students who come in with interests across a broad range of fields. And we know that the skills that they learn in this work can be applied in a million different ways. So students leave and they want to become civic leaders. Some of them want to be activists. Others want to be lawyers. There's the term that you could use for this is that they're all sort of transferable skills. But for us, what we like to say is that some of these students will be journalists. All of them will be engaged citizens one day. So we sort of think of it as a civic engagement and democracy program above all else. And that's the way we start when we talk about how to cover all of this work as well. It's imbued with a lot of importance.
Mm. How are you two feeling about election coverage tomorrow, Ace?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great experience. Obviously, it's going to be my first time covering an election, and I just think that that experience is going to be so incredible. And it's really rewarding just to really see the ins and outs and getting to study throughout the semester and really learn the ins and outs of voting, how people are going to go through that process all the way up into covering it and doing exit interviews. I'm excited, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity.
Do you know where you'll be tomorrow?
I'm not 100% sure yet. I'm going to be working with Town Meeting TV with a few other students and just sort of going around doing exit poll voices. But I think we'll figure out tomorrow where we'll be heading.
Nice. And Gwen?
Yeah, I don't know where I'm going to be as well, but I'm really excited. And we've been preparing, talking about, you know, being transparent about why we're there and election safety. And I covered it last year, exit poll interviews, and I just thought they were so interesting to see the wide demographic that comes out to the polls, and something I just never thought I'd do. But it was so interesting to talk to people.
After a town meeting day last year?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Meg?
Yeah, this follows a kind of model that we use for town meeting day, which is nice because we get to do it every year, and it's really the best example of direct democracy in the country at this point. I can tell you that across all of our classes, we have students who are going to be in tomorrow. This is covering election at both at polling locations and other kind of public spots. They're going to be in Charlotte, Bradford, Newbury, Winooski, Cabot, Marshfield, Calais, Plainfield, Montpelier, Barrie, Hinesburg, South Burlington, Randolph, Waterbury. I could go on and on, but
dang,
those are the places I know that people are going to be. And some of them are going to just getting testimonials from voters, as these guys are, and others are going to be doing more in-depth stories on assignment. We're going to be posting everything as it's edited and finalized on our Community News Service website. It's going to be available to our news partners in real time. And we're all going to be hanging out and also watching the numbers as they come in.
And eating pizza just like we are. So, Gwen and Ace, you two worked on a story together about mail-in ballots, voting by mail. Could you tell us a little bit about it? What did you learn? Gwen, we'll start with you.
Yeah, something I learned was about how far back in history mail-in ballots started, and I had no idea about that. So I was kind of more on that side and learning about the journey that the mail-in ballots take after they're submitted. And AC really focused on looking at a map, seeing the ballots come in live time, and talking about what they can tell us about the community members in each town. So it's been really interesting. And we got to talk to people from the Secretary of State's office, and I just learned so much, and it's helped me inform my peers.
That's great. What about you? What did you think of this process? What did you learn?
Yeah, similarly, I really had no idea the history of mail-in ballots and really just the extent that Vermont goes out to make sure that everybody has access to them by sending out mail-in ballots to every registered voter in the state. And then, you know, voters get to choose if they choose if they'll do a mail-in ballot or if they're going to go in person. So that was a really great thing to learn since Vermont is one of the few states who does that. But also just getting to see the numbers each day. I've been, as the election creeps closer, I've been working more, updating the story every day, just depending on each town. And it's really just given me a different view on Vermont, too. It's really a great opportunity to understand and see the ins and outs of mail-in ballots.
Yeah. One of you two got to interview Vermont's Secretary of State for the story, right? Did I make that up?
Yeah. Yes. I interviewed
Sarah Copeland-Hansas?
No, actually, no. I lied.
Oh,
no.
That's okay. It's an on-air correction. That's important.
Yeah.
What kind of people did you interview for this story to learn about it?
We interviewed Sean Sheehan. He is the director of election finances and campaign offices. And he is the one who told me the ins and outs and the journey that the ballots make. And I could have talked to him for hours. It was fascinating. And the logistics are crazy that they go to make sure that the ballots are kept safe. And I don't know. It was just really interesting.
Yeah. Well, what a great learning opportunity, especially for what I assume is you two's first time voting in a presidential
yes.
election. That's exciting. Did you mail in your ballots early? Are you planning to vote tomorrow? Are you abstaining, as some journalists do, from voting?
I'm going to vote tomorrow so I can get the sticker.
Great reason. What about you?
Yeah, I mailed my ballot just last week, which was really exciting. First time voting, as you said. Little disappointed I didn't get the voting sticker, but you win some, you lose some.
Meg, as any journalist knows, the process of fact-checking is incredibly important, and it's a very weighty responsibility during election season in particular. Talk to us a little bit about how your editors fact-check student work, or maybe even teach that process to them.
Yeah, it's an important part of the process and a part of the design of these collaborative programs. So one of the benefits to our news partners is that the instructors that we have at UVM, who are leading our student journalists, are also seasoned journalists themselves. These are people who, in many cases, spent decades in the field doing reporting and then joined the academic side. Some of them are still working journalists as well. So in practice, what this means is that the students are receiving instruction from them, getting assignments, going out, workshopping stories, and then working through drafts with their instructor editors. So by the time these stories get to our local the newspaper that we might be partnered with on a particular story, they are done or almost done, which means not only that the language, all of the sort of typos and grammatical flourishes that need to be in there are there, but also that every name and number and fact and assertion has been double checked. And this is one of the things that's, I mean, the entire credibility of this work, as any journalist knows, is reliant upon a strong fact-checking process. And it's also one of the things we think about as well is the importance of information and digital literacy right now. So there's a sort of added layer of instruction about how to question the provenance of a photo or of a fact you find online, particularly in an era of artificial intelligence. We have to all approach everything we find with a new level of skepticism.
Wow. And I'm also curious about how you teach or approach the kind of active conversation going on right now about balance or objectivity in reporting. I mean, there's some differences in how different generations of journalists approach objectivity, even in our own newsroom and all the newsrooms I've worked in personally. What are those types of conversations like?
Yeah, there are generational differences. Student journalists are not interested in learning about the sort of view from nowhere that used to inform the industry many years ago. They're far more comfortable with a more forward-thinking approach to journalism that acknowledges the biases and opinions and angles that we all start with. And when this is done well, the idea is that we can check our biases, be skeptical about our own prejudices in these things and the ways in which we might be putting our finger on the scales of our reporting, and then still deliver truthful reporting, right? So these are explicit conversations that we're having about the kind of theory and ethics of the work, and students are getting it also just like through the practical editing of their stories.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear from both of our students here from UVM about that. Ace, what is have you had any, I don't know, challenges with that? Has that come naturally to you, that writing from a quote-unquote objective perspective and figuring out where to put yourself in your work, if at all?
Yeah, it's definitely been a challenge, and it's a learning curve. It's something new. It's a little bit different than writing something like an English essay, but it's a really great experience learning how to write differently, especially for something like an article, and just learning to be objective. But like Meg said, I think a lot of it comes from understanding that everybody has some sort of bias and being able to approach that and understand that and sort of how that's going to impact our writing. But I think our instructors do a really great job of making sure we all understand that, and that we're coming from different backgrounds within that.
Yeah. Gwen, what's that experience been like for you?
Yeah, it's been kind of tough because I'm used to writing film theory essays, which are very opinion-based and stuff. And I feel like I'm kind of selfish with my stories because they come from a place of curiosity. And so it makes it really hard not to place yourself and not implicate yourself into the story. But like Ace said, our instructors have done a great job teaching us AP style and, you know, just making sure that we're not crossing the line of too much subjectivity.
Ah, yes. I am in a constant battle with AP style. I'm always messing up. Let's add in a voice from the phone lines. Deborah in Woodstock is calling in. Deborah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I am a senior, I would say, senior citizen, mid-60s, but I am so happy to hear this. I don't usually call in, but my daughter was a UVM grad in television and film, doing very well right now. And I, in my high school years, had a newspaper that I was an editor of in upstate New York called Balderdash and Ballyhoo.
That's quite the name.
I know. I was very proud of my other colleague students at the time to come up with that, and I have never heard of it since. I even have kept all the copies of that. But we covered a number of different topics, and this was back in the early 70s. So I then went on to journalism in Colorado and then television and also a little bit of film, and then have been able in Woodstock at times over my career, been able to write columns for our newspaper here, Vermont Standard, in years past. But I'm encouraged to hear kind of how UVM is approaching this. And we started the Colorado State Student Broadcasters. Mm-hmm. So it went all the way from journalism like this into other aspects, which is what I was encouraged to hear today, which had me call in.
Oh, well, so Deborah, thank you. I'm sorry to cut you off. I just see Meg wanting to respond to your call and your experiences you just shared.
Yeah, Deborah, I'm so glad to hear that. And it's a great reminder to shout out to our student news reporters on campus. This is the student media portion of what we do. The Vermont Cynic, which is the newspaper on campus that is independent and covers campus. This is an important distinction in the world of student journalism because there's also a critical role, especially right now as higher education is really kind of in the crosshairs of some of the most urgent culture and political wars in the country, that independent student media stays strong on university campuses. So we have a newspaper and a radio station at UVM, and these folks operate entirely on their own. The reporting and editing is done by students, and they do tough, important coverage of the university administration itself as well. And so we're separate entities. What we're doing is kind of working out in the field in Vermont, but we have a great deal of respect for each other's beats, if you will, and this kind of broader ecosystem of student journalism.
Well, that tees me up just perfectly to introduce Sophia Bolinek, the editor-in-chief of the Vermont Cynic, which, as you just said, Meg, is UVM's student paper. Sophia's a senior majoring in geography. Sophia, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
So we're talking here specifically about election coverage, both outside of the UVM campus and on campus as it affects students and professors and the rest of the community there. What's the Cynic's election coverage been like?
So about 2 weeks ago, we had we called it our Cynic Voter Week, and we just had all of the sections doing just vote election related coverage. We had a news piece that was like a man on the street style of how students are feeling about the election, especially given that most all of the students are first time voters in a presidential election, unless you're 22 at the moment. And then our culture section did a how to vote guide for college students, where we gave information about the deadlines for every state for registration, absentee request deadlines, and then absentee ballot return deadlines. And then we also included some information about how many students are from each state, because UVM it's around 75% to 80% out-of-state students. So we thought that that was really important, and especially for people who might not have voted yet in an election this big, that they know how to go about that process. And then we had a feature that was about student voter education, how a couple of organizations around campus are trying to educate people on this election. And then we talked to a professor about the kind of the importance in like of absentee voting, also because again, there's so many out-of-state students, and then just sort of covering how students are feeling about this. And I think there is kind of a level of like disenfranchisement with both sides, so we've kind of been hearing that. And then we also had a couple of opinion columns about how people are feeling about this election. We had a really great one about the generational gap of voting, and like she interviewed her grandfather for it. It was a really lovely piece. We did like kind of a fun piece about hot takes on the election. So that's how we've been getting all of the sections involved. And then tomorrow we're doing live coverage all day of the vibe on campus. There's a couple different watch parties going on. There's like a chill zone to kind of help people grapple with the emotional effect of this election. So we have like a whole staff team of writers and editors and photographers. We're going to be out all day for that.
Wow. That sounds really busy. Sophie, I'm curious how election season has changed this role of being editor-in-chief of a student paper for you. Does it feel like there's, I don't know, extra excitement and extra weight or responsibility, more complications? What does that feel like to you?
I think there is extra responsibility. I think there's been some level of excitement for tomorrow. Like we learned through the encampment earlier this year in May how to do live updates.
And that's the encampment of students protesting Israel's role in the war in Gaza happened on campus earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we sort of were able to kind of work out the kinks with that because that came very, you know, unexpected in a way. And then this has been very much planned. So we have on our chalkboard in our newsroom, we have like a whole schedule of like who's on deck for every hour of the day, which photographers are out there, which reporters and all that stuff. So we have a schedule for that. So I think that has been exciting. But I think, I mean, we also have to continue with our regular coverage. And we're very much driven by what the writers want to write about. So I think there's a degree of like pushing people to write election-based content, but also letting people write about what they want to write about. So yeah, I think those are the ways that it's kind of changed, but it's both nerve-wracking and exciting to also just do something different. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow.
Well, Sophia, best of luck with the Cynic's coverage of the election tomorrow. Thank you for calling in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Gwen and Ace, I am curious what your opinion is on how your how interested your peers at UVM are in election coverage. Are they really, like, do you talk to them about the work that you're doing? Are they excited by it? Or does it feel like, I don't, when I was in college, it felt sometimes like I was just in a bubble, and it was really hard to remember sometimes that there was a world outside of my campus. Gwen, what do you think?
Yeah, I've found that a lot of the people I surround myself with, they already know like what I'm going to inform them on. But it's been great talking to other people in my different classes and telling them, you know, what I'm doing for the election, and then being like, wow, that's actually really interesting. Maybe I should do that next semester. And it's just, I don't know, you see the spark in them when they are like, oh, wait, my voice could be heard. I could be a part of something. So it's been interesting to see that. But I think there's also just like a lot of anticipation and anxiety talking to people. I don't know if that's like from the pandemic or our just generation. But yeah, so I'm just trying to open doors around me.
I love that. Ace, what do you think?
Yeah, I know for myself, I'm definitely surrounded mostly by other students who are also participating in journalism in some form, if not studying it. So I think a lot of us are also covering the election live, which is really interesting. So I get to hear from my peers who are doing other areas. But for a lot of us, it is our first time voting. I think most people in college for the very first time are voting. So it's definitely been a pretty unique experience. And I think there's a lot of people talking about it right now, which is also really nice. So there's a lot of conversations happening around campus, kind of regardless of where people fall, if they're going to cover the election or not, which has been a really interesting way to see, you know, different perspectives, different ways people are planning to, you know, follow the election and more.
Yeah. Let's take one more call here. We have Jim in Castleton on the line. Jim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Hi, thanks. Your conversation reminded me of something I read. One of the student newspapers at Norwich University was shut down for what I understand to be reporting on campus events. I thought the community might want to remember that.
Yes, you're referring to the fact that last month Norwich University suspended its student newspaper. Meg, I'm wondering if you might want to weigh in here. I know you were focused on UVM, but is this an event that you heard about? And did it have you reflecting on that censorship as it does or doesn't exist on the UVM campus?
Yeah, we have limited knowledge of the details of that, but we did talk about what we knew as it had been reported at the time in our own newsroom. And I think it's a really troubling episode, which certainly infringes on the fundamental purpose of student media, which is to be able to cover its own administration and institution. You know, student media, much like community newspapers, serves three essential functions in a democracy. It can inform residents, or in this case, students, and also faculty and staff, on a sort of shared baseline of verifiable facts, right? Sort of establish what's true. But it also holds powerful people to account, and it kind of, and it helps to cultivate a common identity and some shared purpose. And without the function that a newspaper serves, either at the community level or the campus level, you lose that kind of transparency.
I also was interested to learn that Vermont has a law that's on the books that specifically protects public school student journalists from censorship. And it's called the New Voices Law. And I think about a little less than half of states have them on the books. But lastly, Meg, is this something that you're talking with your students about? And I can imagine it's a really different conversation on a college campus when you are enrolled in the school that you are covering, but a lesson that affects journalists everywhere about how to manage reporting on people with power.
It is increasingly a tough challenge for everybody. If I can just draw out to a kind of national level at this point, I'll talk to you a little bit about what we're doing at the national level with the Center for Community News. We work really closely with a partner organization called the Student Press Law Center, SPLC. In our partnership, SPLC was initially designed to help student media, like the Vermont Cynic we just heard from, tackle challenges to legal questions, things like this, just what you're talking about. They have since expanded to also help with these kinds of university community reporting partnerships like the one that we're running. And the reason for this is that, number one, there are more and more of these university-led programs that are stepping in to fill in gaps in community reporting. And they are facing a new onslaught of legal threats, intimidation, doxing of student reporters. Like, there is the dangers to student reporters look a lot like the dangers to all reporters right now. So there's a kind of digital intimidation component. And then there's real life stuff, too. To bring it back to Election Day, we talked to students this time around about what their rights are in covering elections, right? Like, some states have rules about how close you can get to the actual polls. Vermont, actually, it's more kind of ad hoc, depending on where the location is. But many of our partners in other states, their students have been given misinformation and basically told they're not allowed to be covering elections, which, of course, is not true. And so arming student reporters with the information about what their rights are as a journalist and what kind of access they should be afforded just in a democracy has been a big part of what we're doing at both the state level and the national level. I wish I could tell you that it seems like things are getting better, but it feels like they're getting worse at the moment on this front. The good news is that students are getting very smart and they're anticipating these threats.
Meg Little-Riley, I'm sure you all have a lot to do before Election Day tomorrow, so I'll let you go. Meg is the Managing Director of the Community News Service at the University of Vermont. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm so happy to be here.
We are also joined by UVM Senior Gwen Matthews. Gwen, thank you.
Thank you.
And Junior Ace Sheehan. Ace.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck tomorrow on your reporting. We really appreciate you all joining us for this conversation. For many people, college is the first time that they are old enough to vote. That means they have to make their own plan for the first time, too, registering to vote, requesting an absentee ballot, or finding a polling location on Election Day. Youth turnout could make a real difference in this year's presidential elections. And the percentage of college students who vote in presidential elections is on an upswing. In the 2020 presidential election, 66% of college students voted nationwide. It was a record high and an increase from the 54% of 2016. Will this year be even higher? Well, students and professors at Vermont State University sure hope so. To close out this hour, we're going to learn about Get Out the Vote efforts at VTSU's Castleton campus. Joining us now is Rich Clark, a political science professor at VTSU in Castleton, who's been closely involved in these efforts. Rich, welcome.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Castleton senior Ruben Somda. They're the president of the school's content lab, essentially an on-campus marketing and design firm. But Ruben is going to explain it much better than I just did. Ruben, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, Rich, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the history of civic engagement at VTSU and your role.
Well, when I arrived in 2011, we joined the NSOL project. That's the National Study of Learning and Voting Engagement, which tracks our students' voting participation. So we set baselines to try to figure out how to measure the extent to which we increase our students' voting participation. And when we started there, we just were focused on voter registration drives, as many college campuses do. In 2012, we had a pretty successful voter registration drive. And then when I looked back at the data from the Secretary of State's office, we found that this town of Castleton had a really low voter turnout. The only thing I could think of that explained that is we put a lot of students on the voting rolls that never showed up to vote. So since then, we've been switching our efforts from voter registration to voter engagement to get students more engaged, to have them understand the importance of voting, linking their vote to their world, and also just breaking down the process. Telling students to go vote is not all that useful because they have to understand how to register, how to request an absentee vote if they're doing that. So we're focused this year on having students make a plan. And to try to reach students, I reached out to Ruben and the Content Lab. These, you know, they know how to reach students better than I can. And they came up with a lot of visual displays and linking them to an app we're using called MotiVote, which helps students make a plan to vote, breaking it down by all the different steps they need to take. And so the Content Lab helped us reach those students. And then we just did the old-fashioned tabling after that.
Love a table. Ruben, tell us a little bit more about the Content Lab and how you all have worked with Rich this election season.
Yeah, so the Content Lab is a multimedia club. So we kind of focus on different aspects of communication. So we have some graphic design work, we have film video, we did a bit of marketing at some point, but we've kind of been iffy with a few like marketing majors, unfortunately, but a lot of our work involves connecting students with community members and kind of building a repertoire with real life clients to build up students' confidence, but also create tangible work in these different places that we've kind of exist in. And so in this effort, specifically with Rich, we've been kind of trying to figure out how to engage more with students, especially after a lot of trends I've noticed of a lot of students not knowing how to vote and not choosing to vote. And we kind of wanted to find ways to engage with them, but also lower the barrier for entry. Because I know, especially for me, at the very beginning of being able to vote after being 18, it took a lot of time and effort to learn about the process. And it wasn't something that, unfortunately, was thoroughly taught to me. So going through that process and understanding it kind of drove us to wanting to make a campaign that made the process easier and lower the barrier for entry for a lot of students.
So we'll link to some of the materials from this campaign in the show notes for today's episode of Vermont Edition, so folks, if they want to, can see them. But Ruben, could you describe for us what some of these materials look like and why you made the design choices you did?
Yeah, so it's actually very fascinating. A lot of our a lot of our materials came from discussions we had early on about what we wanted to do. Rich was the one who pointed out that they wanted to focus on getting students to make a plan. So we kind of took that and ran with it. And we had a bunch of conversations trying to decide what our slogan was going to be, right? What message we were trying to push to students. And we eventually landed on this kind of motto of our vision, our voice, our vote. And we want to specifically focus on that unification, especially with the VCHU campuses kind of being so far from each other distance-wise, of having a unified message that kind of brings people together. And so going from that idea, we kind of just focused on, well, how do we design something that's relatively eye-catching, but also gives everyone the information they need, right? Especially with design, a lot of what we're considering is we have to make a message that is poignant, that takes you to something actionable. So in this case, it was linking to MotiVote, right? So we had to design for different platforms. We had social media posts that we were designing. We had digital billboards that we designed actually that are on campus around. We also had a few posters, flyers, library displays, banners. We had a few stickers, pins, things like that. And for each of those designs, we really focused on making the image pop. We wanted it to be noticeable from pretty much any distance, and we wanted people to be intrigued by it, but we also wanted to give enough information on each different platform so that people knew where to be directed. So the designs we did for posters would be separate from the designs we did for social media posts, and we kind of juggling what are the strengths of each platforms and how we can use those to get that message to go make a plan to vote and make it easier for people to have an actionable thing to do.
I'd love to get both of your thoughts here on this next question, which is, again, to bring up a conversation from our previous segment about generational differences in the work that both of you are doing. Rich, first, I'm wondering if you have noticed any differences in how students on campus today seem to engage with the voting process, the electoral process, compared to perhaps when you were a student yourself.
I don't. You know, ever since the 26th Amendment passed that gave students the right 18 and older, we've seen turnout rates that have been low. And, you know, we gave students the right to vote, but a lot of them didn't take advantage of it. And in your earlier episode, you had talked about living in a bubble, right? When you are on campus, you do, in college life, you live in a bubble. So trying to pop that bubble a little bit is part of the work. But in my classes, we've relied on a book called Making Young Voters, which focuses on the non-cognitive barriers to voting. Right? Students know just as much as about civic life as the general population. So why are they voting in lower numbers? The system just isn't set up for them. It's not comfortable. I always make the analogy. If I walk into a new restaurant, if I can't figure out how to order, if it doesn't look like I belong, I'm not likely to stay there and dine. That's how students feel going into the polling place. It doesn't look like it's set up for them. They don't know exactly what to do, what they need when they show up. And so we're focused on those non-cognitive barriers to help make voting comfortable. And as Ruben had said, to reduce those barriers.
And Ruben, what do you think? Have you noticed any generational differences in either in engagement with voting itself, or just in, you know, how to market the concept of voting to younger people today?
Yeah, it's been interesting. A lot of what I've been seeing recently, and I think that's kind of been building up for the past couple of years, is a lot of students being a little bit disillusioned by the idea of voting. And obviously, it's not everybody. It's not a sweeping generalization, but it has been very prominent. I think especially as people start to understand how complex of a process it is. And like I mentioned before, when I turned 18, it wasn't really a thing that was taught to me. It was something that I kind of just had to take my time to learn. And it took a long time to kind of get more comfortable with that idea. And I think especially now, we are seeing a lot of people be engaged with the process, but I feel like most of those people are are those that are taking the time to learn about it and have taken the time to kind of understand how complex it is. And like Rich mentioned, it is a very difficult thing to get into. And I think that especially for younger students, we don't have a lot of time, unfortunately, because we're always doing so much. I know for me personally, I'm incredibly busy almost every semester. And even on days off or breaks that I could use to do this research, right, that I could use to figure out how to break these cognitive barriers, it is difficult because there's already so much information out there that oftentimes people don't know where to start, or they feel so overwhelmed by it that they don't want to engage with the process. So a lot of what we've been seeing is trying to kind of mitigate that and to kind of get across the point that we're able to break down that much more complex system into manageable pieces and then slowly build up on those established skills. It's basically what we've been learning to do for our entire 4 years of college. And so just reapplying that into a different mindset to try and lessen the anxieties around learning how to vote and being an engaged citizen.
Mm. Well, lastly, Rich, you are also a longtime poll volunteer. What will you be doing on Election Day tomorrow?
I'll be handing out ballots for people coming into my town's town clerk office for voting. It's a great way to kind of connect. I recommend this for all students because seeing the process happen, you get a good sense of how seriously our town clerks take this, how well it's run. It takes away some of the mystery of what happens during the election process. And if I could throw in, I would be remiss if at some point I didn't say that the program we use for helping the students vote was paid for by our student government, that they thought this was an important enough venture that they used their budget to help fund this.
Wow. Well, it's very exciting to hear about all of these efforts to get out the vote at VTSU and earlier at the University of Vermont. Rich Clark, political science professor at VTSU Castleton, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And Ruben Somdad, thank you so much as well for joining us here.
No problem. It's a pleasure.
Ruben is the president of Castleton's Content Lab and a senior there.